horse, and all of a sudden her position had to be based in there.
Yeah.
There used to be a tourism position based in Dawson. That was Accio Sato's role. When he retired, it was never filled here. It was filled in
Yeah.
Whitehorse. And the community advisors, oddly enough, they used to live in the rural communities in which they serve. So
Yep.
Dawson, Ross Knox was a community advisor for us and Mayo. And the biggest thing that has been lost by that drawing in of people into Whitehorse has been no one in Whitehorse who is responsible for a significant amount of planning for rural communities ever has to live with the consequences of their decision. They never ever have to talk to the people on the street about what's going on and all the rest of it. And they miss so much of what's important. I
Yep.
just, it really is, I think it's at the root of why we see lots happening in Whitehorse, not much happening out in rural communities.
I mean, that's got to change. Add one more to that and talk about economic development officers, rural economic development officers. Why are they based in Whitehorse? And why not in the communities that they serve? I agree. Rural superintendents for schools, absolutely.
I can tell you why they're in Whitehorse.
I was like, maybe.
I looked at it as part of one of my papers in MBA about, I did a whole thing around rural economic development. And I said, look, everything's centralized, even the advisors for rural.
Yeah.
And there's almost no way you can understand rural reality being based at a
For sure.
Whitehorse, especially if you're floated in from somewhere else. So, I mean,
Yeah.
I keep saying I keep learning every day. We're going to start off. Mary Wayne Podoroka is here. Shelley Hazard from the one who helps me look good. It's a full-time job for Shelley. And Lauren, she's got help with Laura, who's here. She's also helping me look good, another full-time job. Tara Wheeler is on our AYC executive and with CarMax. And Mayo, who is Margaret? Who's with you?
Deputy Mayor Blair Andre and Councillor Carol Knight.
Great to see you, everyone. Thanks a lot for joining us. So we are going to get going. First, just want to acknowledge I'm coming to you straight from the heart of Teslin, which sits on the traditional territory of Teslin Tlingit people. So glad to say that. Just want to thank you, Kate, to take time out of your, I would assume, very busy schedule. It might be an understatement of the year to join us tonight. And of course, I'd like to thank all the participants, people, our council members who joined us. A little bit of a small group tonight, but that's fine. They're hearty, and I'm sure we'll have lots of questions. We do have questions, and I'm sure there'll be lots of follow-up questions. So again, appreciate everyone taking time. It's been a busy time for everybody. So we're going to start. You did get the questions in advance.
Yeah, for sure.
I just want to make sure you did get a chance to take a look at them. So we'll just start off. So land lot development, that's a huge issue and it's come up a few times. As the population of the Yukon continues to increase an average of 2.1% per year. Oh, before I go. So we figure we've got about 5 minutes per question, maybe a little less. We're going to leave the five and then we're going to give our membership a follow-up and ability to do a follow-up question in the line of the question that we've asked, okay? Sorry about that. And it won't be a hard five. It'll be no sirens. No. Yep. All
It's
right, thanks.
okay.
So as the population of the Yukon continues to increase an average of 2.1% per year, available housing and vacant lots continue to decline. Municipalities continually struggle with lack of housing or available land to build a home for new staff hires and families moving to their community. Yukon municipalities are in critical need of developed residential land lots. Will your party support future growth and development by providing developed residential lots to municipalities? And if so, what will be your timeline and strategy?
The really easy part of that answer is just yes. I haven't been to a single community who hasn't talked about the needs for land and lot development, because of course that leads to housing and businesses. Ultimately, this is going to be one of those things that comes across, and I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but you all know what's best for your communities, and because ultimately one size won't fits all won't work. and dictating, like you, we've talked about just off before we got onto these questions, dictating from Whitehorse about what you need is never going to be appropriate. I think there's real opportunities to partner with First Nation governments within within your communities, looking at land development and lots based on the Kwinana Dun First Nation accessing land titles. So I think there's some opportunity there as well. But Yukon government-owned land absolutely needs to be made available, and we need to work out and figure out how that is. As for timelines, I know that so many of our communities are really desperate, right? We have so much catch up to do. I was just in Mayo. I know that they've had rural residential lots released, but really need development in town. Teslin, same conversations, like across the way, you know, conversations with Mayor Podoroka. So we've got a lot of catch up to do. And I think it's really going to be a matter of working with you folks at the AYC and then each of the individual communities to figure out what the strategy needs to be go forward. So how, you know, whether it's Yukon government developing the lots, whether there's businesses within your communities, whether there's I think there's a lot of different ways of looking at that. But ultimately, I think it's going to have to be dictated by you folks who are the experts. So whether it's in partnership with the AYC and then going to each community to identify, but just kind of figuring out on, it might actually be a matter of sitting down too and taking a look at a community map and just figuring out what the short-term immediate need is to try to get those right away, and then figuring out for future planning, right? So just trying to, like I said, playing catch up. But ultimately, a lot of my answers are going to talk about how you know best, because you are in those communities, and like you alluded to, Gord, dictating from outside of Teslin isn't going to make any sense. So a lot of it's going to be working with you folks.
Great, thanks, Kate. There's a follow up question that just came up in our last session, just around affordable lots. Because that's another challenge for a lot of our communities to develop lots, and then they're really expensive.
Sure. I think there was this really weird thing that happened, and it's been hard to track down when it happened. But at one point in time, Yukon government, they had a policy, which is lots either went for the cost of development or market value, whichever was less expensive. And then somehow it flipped, and all of a sudden when Yukon government was developing lots, it was going for market value, which meant it really skyrocketed those. And I think that there's different ways. So working within your communities to get more affordable lots, and I think that this is kind of something that we're trying to figure out in Whitehorse as well. But if they're sold at for example, at a lower price, and that is recorded in, you know, in a legal way, so that when it does sell again, or when the home sells again, that the lot price is kept at that. And it's similar actually to a housing model, but I'll talk about that later. And again, with the First Nations, it's looking at like a 99 year lease, right? So in some cases that might be ideal for folks, and the cost of development will be a lot less then. But yes, recognizing that a market priced lot isn't ideal, right? Because it is at a different value than what it actually costs to develop.
Thanks, Kate. We'll open up the floor to questions. We've got about a minute or so. If anyone has any questions around this line, question? Mayo.
It's Blair Andre. The issue I see with development of lots in town is basically, like, I'm talking about what's in town here is owned by Yukon Housing.
Okay.
And direction needs to come from leadership to Yukon Housing to tell them this is what's needed in Mayo. Do it. Not listen to these guys, as far as I'm concerned, in Yukon Housing, they changed president, vice president. I've seen half a dozen of them over the last 15 years. They don't seem to really get the message that we try to give them. And I simply think that hopefully I can hear it from you, that if we tell you that there's 8 empty lots owned by Yukon Housing here in Mayo, and they've been empty here for the last 20 years or more, and we're waiting for them to do something, I want to hear from you that's saying, yeah, I'm going to do something about that, and I'm going to direct the Yukon Housing people to release those lots.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you touched on something that could fall under the next question as well, which is I know in conversations with some folks in Mayo, and including some UConn government staff who don't actually want to be in staff, like they don't want to be in UConn housing, they'd like to be able to rent. But when you're trying to get teachers, for example, or healthcare workers and things like that, making sure that you have the available housing. And if there's too many, although I would defer to you folks on the ground because you would know best. But for example, if there was a glut of lots with UConn housing and it made more sense to make them available for sale to the public, then that could be a conversation. But ultimately the only way out of a housing crisis, which I would say the territory is in straight across the board, is to build more homes. And so it's good to know that there are lots available in Mayo that are owned by UConn Housing. And I guess the question is how come we've waited so long to build on them?
Thanks, Kate. Good segue into the next question, just because we've hit our time on this one. If anyone has questions about this, just hold them to the end, and hopefully we'll have a little bit of space at the end of the session. Affordable housing. Everyone deserves a safe roof over their head, but too many UConn families, workers, students, and seniors struggle to find an affordable place to live. Growing the supply of social and affordable housing for low-income UConners is crucial. So is ensuring that rental housing remains affordable for people across all income levels. While the recent announcement of $40 million in carve-out funding for housing in the Yukon is a welcome relief, how is your party prepared to tackle the housing affordability crisis in the Yukon? What are your strategies?
Thanks. I feel like lot and lot development and affordable housing and housing is all going to kind of get lumped together. So like I just said, the only way to get out of our current housing crisis is to actually build more homes. And that requires more lots and more land and that kind of thing. I believe that this is all going to be in partnership. I don't think that UConn government has all the answers. Municipal governments have a lot of ideas about what needs to be done on the ground. First Nations governments and development corporations, and then private investors, private developers. So that's, it's going to be everybody, all hands on deck. So more lots, we talked about that before. One of the things that we've proposed, which is about the folks of modest incomes being able to purchase homes, is actually a housing authority model based on the Whistler model. And it's also really similar to Habitat for Humanity. So if you imagine that a house gets built and it gets sold for the cost of building, as opposed to like what it would be valued at on the market. And then if it ever gets sold, it only gets resold within folks who qualify in those modest incomes. So those homes are never used as, they're never used as comparables for real estate. They never devalue their neighbor's homes because they're not ever available on the open market. But what it allows for is folks to own homes in a way that they might not be able to do on the open market. And so we just talked about this and thanks, and for Mayo to bring this forward is that every community in the territory needs access to UConn housing units. So whether it's for teachers or other UConn government staff, senior citizens, whoever, that needs to happen and it needs to be community led. So if you have a chronic inability to hire teachers because you don't have a place to put them, then we need to look at what kind of teacher, like, are they single people coming? Are they people with families? I'm looking towards the Mayo Council for this direction, but I was in the community last Saturday and I knocked on some UConn housing doors and I believe they were single people and they were government employees in multi-bedroom houses. So they were in full houses and they were individuals. And so that seems like a bad use of space. Again, housing looks different. When I was in Pelly Crossing, people talked a lot about that they didn't need big houses. They just needed houses. So it's making sure that we have a range of options. So if you do have your families, that there's places for them to go. If you have your single people, there's places for them to go. But recognizing that it doesn't have to be four bedroom houses and it doesn't have to be one bedroom houses, right? Finding that spectrum. And then also working with folks who want to invest. So, there's like lots of great examples of people in community saying like, well, I want to live here and I want to invest in my community. So I'm going to build a rental property, right? making sure that that there's partnerships that exist. And then also when we talk about affordability, I think it's really important that we talk about rent and the fact that in the last number of years, rent is because of the way our legislation is in Yukon, rent can be increased once every 12 months, but there's no cap on that. And so we see people getting priced out of places they've lived, because if you get a 40% increase on a place and 40% is out of your range on top of what you're already paying, that does not long no longer become affordable. So we've committed to capping rent increases to make sure that people can plan. But ultimately, I think the whole way we're going to have to tackle housing is going to be through partnerships. And I think there's going to be real opportunity for builders. And I think there's opportunities for education in communities. And anyway, that's all different ways to put it together. But yeah, housing, I haven't been to a single community who hasn't said that housing is a concern.
Except maybe Faro, but
oh.
I think they've gone the other way. They've actually got, I think they've sold a lot of those houses. So
they have, but they have some that need to come down. So that's actually an issue in Faro.
Yeah, it tends to be unique, standout is a little different. So do you have any questions from the floor around this question? Mayo?
Oops, you're muted. Sorry.
Yeah.
I got to get my assistant here to hold the button here. Anyhow, yeah, you're absolutely right about the housing. I mean, yeah, they're all, you know, basically three bedroom houses, and some of them, you know, or a lot of them have just one person.
Yeah.
A lot of them are staff housing. I don't know which houses you went to, but some of those houses are staff housing for the nursing station for nurses and that, and mm-hmm. and such. They've taken over a large part of the Yukon, available Yukon housing here. I think they have 5 units here now.
Okay.
One of them I know for sure has been sitting empty for a long time. But yeah, the biggest problem that I see is with the rent.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you need to really think about putting a cap on the rent, even for somebody who's making good money. I mean, all you do is every time you get a raise, Yukon Housing gets a raise. You know, yeah. The wife goes to work, Yukon Housing gets a piece of that pie. You know, I've known people who've been in here paying almost $3,000 a month for a unit. Of course, they're going to try to get out of town here as quick as they can. Mm-hmm. You know, the first available job to come up in Whitehorse, they're gone. They can't afford to stay here. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest problem. I know that they're supposed to be raising the rents here on staff housing, finally, after 28 years or whatever. But they need to, government needs to think about putting a fair market value cap on units and make it, and that will help make it affordable to not only low income people, but moderate income people and actually people who do well, you know, absolutely. Yeah. So,
there's a really good point in there. And that's the unintended consequence of doing the 25%, but not taking into account. I think people are happier and healthier when they have purpose. And purpose sometimes can include volunteering, or it can include work, or it can include those things. But if we have a system that almost disincentivizes working, or disincentivizes that kind of participation in economy or society, because people are essentially financially punished for it, we have to reevaluate that. I've often wondered how come when we've got folks, and I mean, the part of the problem is too, is sometimes you can almost get trapped in Yukon housing, because if you try to get a second job so you can earn more money to get a down payment, well, you're paying more rent and you never be able to save that money. Is I think that there has to be a better way of looking at how that's done. And I think especially, you know, you're right, in rural communities especially, because if we price people out of rural communities and we drive good people away, then it's an unintended consequence, and that doesn't make any sense. And you're right, staff housing should be more than $600 a month. So I'm glad that's happening, right? I'm glad that conversation is happening.
Thanks, Kate. And that question about the Yukon housing rent geared to income, Clara would be really happy to hear that Blair asked that question, because she's asked it continuously over the last decade. So we're going to move on to the next question. There's actually 4 of them. This is under the Building Vibrant Communities section.
Yeah.
And which we touched on just before we actually started this, but here we've got four specific questions. So Yukon communities are all face unique challenges such as geography, climate, demographics, community health and well-being, staff attraction and retention, and more. These challenges cannot be solved by a cookie-cutter approach. Yukon municipalities need modern tools and a seat at the table to empower rural leaders to build better lives. The first question, and we'll just do one at a time, will your party adapt programs and policies to rural realities so smaller communities can respond directly to local priorities and needs?
Yeah, I think that I looked at all these and I thought about all the meetings I've been to and all the stuff that I've heard when I've been to those meetings, and I just nodded my head. So one of the things, just overarching, and I'll get to that particular question. Overarching, when we've got our rural communities, a couple pages in our platform, and we believe that Yukon government needs to adopt a community lens to ensure that that you as leadership within your communities aren't being excluded from the decisions that affect you. And we think that what that means is that there can't be, like, we can't be making decisions in Whitehorse for communities without communities being involved in that. So that is how I think everything should go for when we talk community-wise. And so building vibrant community, sorry. Yes, sorry, I was trying to find my spot because I wrote these things down because I didn't want to miss them. So we are committed to adopting a community policy lens. And I think the issues that that you highlighted today and continue to highlight can be captured in there. Ultimately, and I said this before, and I'm going to say it a lot more times, but you all know best what's happening in your communities, and you know how to best respond, right? So it's about making sure that you have the ability to be able to influence that. And then I thought this was kind of a bit of a, that was the wrong one. Oh no, maybe that was the right one. Policies. Oh yeah. So yes. Sorry. Yes. Community policy lens. I got ahead of my notes. But yeah. Again, you guys are the experts, and so it's about making sure that we work with you to figure out how to best address your needs and concerns.
Any follow up questions to that? Because I'll move on to the next one. We need to save a little time. We got a little bit behind after a pre-conversation. So that next question is, no, it's fine. It's all part of the same discussion. So the next question is, will your party seek municipalities' expertise on issues such as infrastructure program design and promoting trade that drives economic development?
Sure. So this one is the one I thought was two parts. Yes to infrastructure program design. Again, you know what your communities need. And you have an idea of, you're the one working on the official community plans and what the future looks like. So yes to that. And as for economic development, we had this whole conversation before about those jobs that used to exist in communities and then have been removed. And so I fundamentally believe in the importance of decentralizing Yukon government jobs. And imagine, you know, those positions that Mayor Podoroka highlighted and regional economic development officers who live in your communities again, all those things to make sure those partnerships work, but making sure that there's the opportunity to have them in your community so they're not all centered in Whitehorse.
Is there a follow-up question? Anyone? Oh, Mayo? Blair?
It's me again, yeah.
It's okay, fire away.
With the infrastructure, Kate, I just want you to understand that with us, we have no real, you can see it in CarMax too. We've had the big issue here with our water tower is accountability from the contractors. And actually the people who come in and doing the inspections, and everything else, it's not as consistent as I think it should be myself. I've been involved with building maintenance and that over the years. And I was used to a lot better accountability with government, like doing their own projects like schools and administration buildings, or whatever. But when it came to projects that was involved, like that the municipality is being involved in, I just find the accountability lacking a bit. So I just want to let you know that there has to be better accountability for projects that the government is involved with municipalities. It's important, it's lagging. And you can see what's happening in CarMax. Here in Mayo, we've got $1.5 million lawsuit going on. It's we have issues with water and sewer sometimes with contractors, and it just, I just shake my head. I think, what the hell's going on here? You know?
So just a quick question with that. Do you think if the project management team was not only accountable to Yukon government, but also to the community where the work was being done, that would be helpful? So that you were included in when, you know, through that project management position?
Well, they are, they do have, like, you know, a relationship with our CEO, mm-hmm. but sometimes you have people that they're talking to that aren't really, that's not their forte, you mm-hmm. know? You know, it's not Margaret's job to know how to, you know, build water towers, mm-hmm. you know, and why is after the fact that you've built this water tower with, I don't know, bolts from China or some damn thing, why yep. is the damn thing leaking? You yep. know, who was responsible for that to happen? Who was responsible to inspect that to make sure that didn't happen? Mm-hmm. Like, I should have been there from government who we've hired,
yeah.
to make sure every nut and bolt they tightened up on there was torqued down to specifications. And I don't think they were, you know?
Yeah.
There's like issues.
Sorry, I was going to say, I think the issue comes up with then if you know, Yukon government inspectors are passing it and the project manager is allowing to go forward, then that responsibility or that onus of responsibility needs to land with Yukon government. So it's not being passed over to the municipalities to fix. Right. And I think we've seen that more often than I think is, well, more often than is acceptable for sure.
I you asked a real pointed question there, and I wanted to answer it with a yes. I think that, yeah, having without, you know, no small municipality wants to take on any more liability than we already do.
Yeah.
But having a stick that you can use, you know, it would be really valuable, because you're worried about the bolts in your water tower. How about a 35 million dollar sewage plant that doesn't work?
Worked.
Like, and who has ever been held accountable for that? Like, the answer is it would be great to have that accountability, and I think it would solve a lot of the problems where people just don't feel the consequences of their mm-hmm. decisions out in the rural communities.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I think that is something that I hope you folks will put on the side there and be like, this needs to be discussed no matter what the outcome is on April 12th with whoever is in charge. Because that is something that I think AYC should be pushing for, is making sure that there can be that, I wouldn't even say accountability partnership, because I don't think you should be accountable for things that you have no control over, but making sure that you have the ability to have more control over that. So I hope you make a little note of that and you push for that.
Thanks, Kate. Just a small Teslin, that's having more control over projects. It's an ongoing battle with the government, for sure. I mean, we do run our own projects, but it's an ongoing battle. So just a commentary. We are going to move on to the next question.
Sure.
So some good points made by everybody from the last one. So the next question is, will your party ensure new investments in broadband? And broadband that turns into reliable internet connections for rural communities? We it's the pandemic. We've through Canada. This has underscored our problem.
Sure.
Go ahead.
So, the answer to that is yes. I think we're long past the conversation about internet being a privilege. I think now we've got to start talking about that connectivity as being a right. We've committed to making sure that it's more affordable. That's in the platform. But we know, you know, the last year, and you just highlighted it there, Gord, that the last year we've recognized the importance of having access to reliable internet as far as being able to connect with the outside world, right? To be able to fully participate in the world, internet access has become key. And we know we're far too vulnerable here. Like, how many times does the line get cut in like Grand Prairie and there's no internet in the Yukon? So yes to those, and absolutely. I think the dream is at one point, you know, you could upload a photo in Old Crow. That would be really cool, because it's quite the endeavor right now. So yes to that one.
If I ever have to hear, are we going to get Old Crow? Well, it's snowing up there. So,
right?
We're not going to hear from Old Crow. It's part of the university network. So, is there a follow up question to that question? Mayo? Blair? Go for it.
It'll be great to have, you know, all this extra broadband wins and everything else. But my point I want to make is affordability. It's just not fair what we pay compared to what Whitehorse pays for the, we get like 300 gigs, okay, for $90 a month. God, don't go over that 300 gigs here because it's like a demand meter.
Yeah.
You go over by 20, 30, 40 gigs, man, it's like 40, 50 bucks. Like right now, boom, to your bill. I mean, they keep telling, they'll tell you, they'll send you a message, tell you how much money you're spending. And with, you know, so anyhow, it has to be affordable for everybody.
Agreed. Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Great question, Blair. Okay. And the final question of the series, will your party promote economic development in partnership with local leaders? And I guess it should have been local economic development. I mean, there's lots of economic development, but local economic development, local leaders.
Yes. Sorry. For everything that we were talking about before.
And, yes. How maybe? Sure.
Okay. So there's a couple of things. Again, I've said it before and I'll say it again. You're the experts in the communities you live in. You understand the challenges. You understand the opportunities. And I bet you probably even know how we can get there. Right. So it's about making sure we support that in partnership. I think about the rural economic development officers. Again, how come they're in Whitehorse? Like, why aren't they in your communities, or why aren't they closer? So I think it's going to be a combination of those things. I think it's also really, I think it'll also be following, honestly, part of your official community plans and kind of where you want to go and what that looks like. Recognizing, for example, when I was in Teslin and I was at the candidate forum, and there was the mention that there's no laundromat. Right, which doesn't sound like a big thing if you have a washer and dryer in your house, but it's a massive thing if you don't, because the nearest laundry isn't until you get to Whitehorse, right? So making sure that that some of those things are addressed in different ways, and making sure that there's the opportunity for the communities to benefit from those investments, right? So who owns it? Who runs it? Who maintains it? But then again, you guys will have suggestions about things that you'd like to see. And so how does UConn government support you to get there?
Is there a follow-up question? Claire? I guess not. No follow-up. Okay. All right. So we're going to move on to the next one, which is a fun one for municipal leaders. One we spend a lot of time on, solid waste and regional landfill agreements. So over the last decade or more, the Association of Yukon Communities and Yukon Government have been working on feasible liability, lease, and regional landfill agreements for rural municipalities. While this work has taken years of progress, we are finally nearing completion. So the question is, will your party ensure that these agreements are completed in a fair and timely manner?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, recognizing that communities have been asking for these agreements and been working towards them, and understanding that I've heard when you all say it needs to be done in an equitable manner, and we're not going to go one at a time, right? I think the leadership that's been shown by the AYC membership and that united front that you folks have put on to make sure that it's not community by community, you're making sure that it's being negotiated so everybody gets a fair kick at the can, I think is really important. But heaven forbid, we should be talking about this in 10 years. So let's get to it. Let's get that in place. So that is one less thing on your municipal plates.
Or on our municipal plates, but being paid for it.
Yeah, sorry. On your municipal plate.
Already there. Yeah.
But in a way that's not a headache, right? Yeah. I mean, you guys deal with, water, sewer, and waste. That's, you know, you're the first contact that people have with government.
Yep. Local government doing our best, delivering key services. Okay, next one is around, actually, is there a follow-up question around that, around regional solid waste? Surely to goodness, there's a follow-up question about garbage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blair, we hear you.
Just a comment that for Kate there, that we haven't been really particularly happy the way government has been, we feel, been pushing us to their end.
Okay.
Not to our end, you know.
Okay. They're
making some, we feel sometimes unreasonable expectations they've been putting on the Village of Mayo. We're okay. A bit of a situation. We you know, we get garbage coming here from everybody all around the, you know, Keno, Victoria Gold, Alexco. There's a NND doesn't even, I mean, it's very expensive for us to run a landfill.
Okay.
And we're trying to get this message across to government that I deal with. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I just wanted to make that comment about it. Just, you know, if you win the election, Kate, believe me, you're going to hear about it from us.
You good.
You'll hear about it from AYC, believe me.
Yeah, good. Just that on that, I think one of the biggest disservices we ever did to ourselves a million years ago was treat garbage like it was free. Never taking into the full cost of what meant to collect. And I think that's why we're getting so much pushback now when we're talking to people about whether or not we need to charge fees and what those fees look like. And so I think there's going to be a lot of work in having to rewrite how people look at garbage. And I don't think that's going to be easy, but it is important. And we have to make sure on a go forward basis, we do a better job of that communication.
Any other follow-up? I do have a follow-up question, but any other, I'm going to keep the floor open. Any other follow-up questions? So there is a reason why YG is getting out of the landfill business, and it's because it's expensive. So it is a bit of a moving it over to us, although we have already been doing some. Just on that, just a more of a local issue than a municipal issue is the closure of some of the dumps, as you probably have heard.
Johnson Crossing?
Don't know how much you need in detail, but yeah, it's a huge issue locally. So I just curious if you have any thoughts around that.
Sure. I think we have to really, for one thing, when I asked the Minister of Community Services how many people lived in the Johnson's Crossing catchment area, I couldn't get an answer, which I think is problematic, right? We should know that for sure. And I also think that we have to figure out as society, as UConners, as whomever, what is too far from the nearest landfill, right? What is too far? And then not just in summer conditions, but in winter conditions. And I would say that Keno to Mayo or Johnson's Crossing to Teslin, those two to me are too far, right? When you're looking at more than a 120 kilometer round trip and those things. I also think, to be honest, and I hear you talking about the downloading of that responsibility to municipalities, but municipalities also don't get more than $1 billion in transfer payments from the federal government to take care of those things. And so it is a matter of figuring out like what the partnership has to look like. So if you folks are responsible for like the day-to-day maintenance, and maybe the liability does have to be carried by UConn government because they have deeper pockets. So it's, I think, and I don't want to restart the process. Like if you guys are getting close enough that you feel like it's good, but I do think it would be really good to have a like good, honest conversations about like what the reality is. And I think just so you all know, I go to every landfill when I'm in a community, because I feel like, because I've been the critic for community services for the last 4+ years. And it's really helpful for me to get an idea of what I'm talking about if I actually physically know what it looks like. So I've been to your dumps or your transfer facilities. I've been to them. So I think this, like, there's a lot to learn for sure.
So a couple of things. 54 people in Johnson's Crossing. It's right in the UConn Bureau stats.
Oh, thank you.
They started breaking it out 2 years ago. I found that out. Second thing, once you're done with this territorial thing, you should be run for municipal election, because that's municipal leadership. Because I got to say, one of the first things I learned is you don't go to another community. Hey, what's your dump look like?
Yeah, right.
It's an interesting thing that we go and tour everyone's dumps and water systems and all those things. So,
and there's really good ideas. right? And how do we mirror those good ideas in some places into others? Like, I think, yeah. I think there's some great ideas out there.
Yep. All right, we're gonna move on to the next question because we got 15 minutes and we have three questions. So the next one is near and dear to our heart, comprehensive municipal grant. The Association of Yukon Communities and Yukon Government have convened a working group committee to review the current CMG. The committee has been working together for over a year and has valid concerns about the number of peripheral users using municipal services and infrastructure. The number of peripheral users around each municipality has been virtually impossible to identify, and they continue to enjoy services provided by municipalities. However, these users do not pay municipal property taxes that help pay for municipal infrastructure, operations, and maintenance. So the first question is, I'm going to give you both at the same time because they're very close. Yeah. Will your party commit to ensuring that the working group continues and agree to consider their recommendations? And the second part is, will your party commit to identifying the number of peripheral users around each municipality and provide sustainable revenue to each community so they can continue to provide services to peripheral users?
Yeah, the real easy answer for that is yes and yes. I think the recommendations from you folks will be key in moving forward when we talk about the first one about your ideas on how that the CMG looks going forward. And then Gord, you could tell me that there were 54 residents in Johnson's Crossing and the Minister of Community Services couldn't. So that is an example of information that should be known. I think there's also a real problem, and this is going to make me unpopular in some circles, which is fine, but the rural tax rate has been really, really low and it hasn't changed. So your municipal taxes have changed, but people who might live just outside of Tesla and their taxes haven't, and they still access all your services. So that, yes, it has to change. It has to be more reflective of the day, but it also has to be that sharing agreement. So how much goes to the nearest municipality where people are accessing those services, and then how much goes back into the general coffers. So I think people should be paying for the services that they use, right? They should be paying their part. So there's going to be some tax changes, I think.
Okay, just one comment. I'm making a lot more commentary. There's 54 users, they're permanent probably people. But in fact, it's a little more nebulous and a little bit more difficult than that because they have lots of cottagers or people that are more transitionary. They use Canal Road. Just to give you a little heads up, that 54 is there, but it's actually a lot more.
But there's more. Okay.
Yep. Any other questions? Wayne, do you have a comment about your favorite thing, rural tax rates?
Yeah, shameful. They haven't gone up. It's shameful that people are paying pittance and receiving all of the services that people within incorporated communities receive and have to pay 4-5 times the taxes. Not only is the tax rate the problem, but for some bizarre reason, the assessed values of properties just on the other side of the municipal boundary are completely catawampus. So it's encouraging to hear that people are willing to talk about it. Because I think, I think that Yukon people sometimes have I'll be careful what I say because I'll probably end up saying it again when I bring up my boutique issue later on. Thanks.
So any other questions? Open up the floor, no questions. I have a question, but I think I'll leave it to the end just to leave room for other people, and I may not even ask it. So the next one is on energy retrofit solution. I'm not sure how much you're up on this issue.
Oh,
but yeah.
I know it all. Okay. You don't even have to read the preamble, Gord. I got
okay.
You.
I'll go right to the question. Will your party commit to finding an alternate method to deliver the proposed energy retrofit program without downloading any responsibility to municipalities?
Yes. So when this was first announced in the YG budget speech, I asked if communities had been consulted. I asked that, have you consulted with the communities you're talking about? And you all know the answer because the answer was a resounding no. And I think this shows kind of one of the problematic approaches to not including communities in decisions that affect you. And it also means that something that's, I think, is really good. If we talk about energy retrofits and we talk about affordability of houses and how that helps and all these things, it means that this program hasn't rolled out because instead of talking to you at the beginning or all of you, I mean, this is the royal you, and making sure that this made sense. It was announced without ever looking into the mechanics of what that would look like. And I honestly don't think, and it was brought to my attention that there could be very few people in an office actually taking care of this. So I don't think that it makes any sense to ask a community that is already juggling or doing a really good job of managing the programs that they have to add one additional one onto it. And of course, the liability of carrying that. So yes, it shouldn't be downloaded to you. I would say that UConn Housing had a fantastic energy retrofit program or home improvement program. And I think it could be expanded. We could look at going towards like the Energy Solution Center if we're just talking about energy programs. But I don't think it ever belonged at the municipality level. And I don't think asking you folks to take care of that program and roll it out and then the management of that ever made sense. And then I don't know why we would ever say, well, we're going to give the money to you and then you're going to give the money onwards and then you're going to collect it and you're going to send it back. Like, it just seems like there was a lot of steps added. So yes, I think energy retrofit programs are really important. No, it shouldn't be the way that it was proposed.
Follow-up questions or comments? I think that seemed to be a really, oh, Laura, or, and some Laura's clapping.
Sorry, I'm all just right. Clapping.
Yeah, I don't.
I was, I
don't,
like, yeah, you might have to do some of that.
Yeah, I don't think the silence was acceptance in this instance. Okay, we're going to open up the floor to questions. We've got about 5-10 minutes, depending on which clock I'm looking at. But open up floor. Wayne, you alluded that you might have a question.
This is my boutique issue. I find, you know, that UConn people, for, I think it's, you know, it's been how we've been trained almost to believe that, you know, money's just a concept and all the good things should fall out of the sky like manna. But the homeowner's grant to me is probably, it's a ridiculous program in my opinion. The UConn government giving me $450 every year. I don't need it. I'll take it and I'll spend it. Don't get me wrong. And I'm happy that those of my neighbors who do need it get it, because I know that they're out there. No problem with that. But I don't need it. Yeah. And I'll bet you probably the majority of the people that I meet in the day-to-day don't either. I was really discouraged to hear when, you know, that the UConn wouldn't be able to access all of the federal government money coming our way through the Improving Canada's Infrastructure Program, because we didn't have all enough money to match the money that they were giving us.
Yeah.
And it the shortfall was about $40 million, if I recall correctly. Well, lo and behold, it costs the UConn government about $4 million every year to administer and cut $450 checks every year to people, which over the 10 years of the program, well, what do you know? It'd be $40 million. So we'd all have the infrastructure that we need, clean water, sewage plants at work and all the rest of it. It is a sacred cow in some circles, but I'm telling you now that I think there's more people that are walking outside of that circle. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, have you given any thought to the possibility of sunsetting that program, putting the money to, you know, except for those who need it?
Yeah.
And putting the money towards those things that we all need collectively as communities. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. Is it an election commitment? No, because I'm already pushing people farther than they're comfortable. I think one of the things that you just highlighted was the fact that when folks need that support, they need that support. And when they don't, they don't. And so finding that balance. I think one of the things that you mentioned was the idea that over 10 years that money would have been saved, which is why I think that we need to look at, you know, whether it's a heritage fund or a legacy fund, But we need to look at having, you know, a place where money goes so that we can, you know, we can match federal funding when it comes, so that you all can have clean water and sewage treatment plants that work. And you're right. A lot of people don't need that. And a lot of people say that, myself included. I certainly don't need the homeowners grant.
So I thank you for that response. I would never, the same thing I said to John Stryker, who's on the phone the other week, I don't think anyone would ever run an election on me. I'm taking your $450 fun bucks away, everybody. But I'm happy that people are willing to talk about it, because I think it's time that it was. And if you ever needed any evidence that this program is an ass, it's that when it was originally implemented in the early 70s, it was $400. It is now $450. And it's like one of those programs where people are like, hey, why don't we, like, what do we do with this thing? Well, we can't cancel. Well, let's not raise it. You can't raise it, is kind of goofy. Yeah. But I thank you for that response.
All right. Well, let's just take one more question. We are at 8 o'clock, but got one more question, Kate, if we got one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For sure.
Mayo, you've unmuted. It tells me that Blair's cooking up a question.
Absolutely. Just one of your little blurbs I seen on Facebook, Kate. You mentioned about outside workers coming into the territory.
Sure. Yep.
Paying their fair share. I've kind of put Patty on the spot last night with this question.
I heard, so I'm glad I can answer it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the question?
Do you want me to explain that?
Yeah.
The question is, what are you going to do? How's this going to work? I kind of agree with what you want to do there.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I need to hear more information if you.
So this actually hits quite a few of you, because you're in places where we do have like the fly in, fly out. Those of you with large active mine sites and other stuff as well. In some cases, I dare say some Yukon government assistant deputy ministers, even in some cases. So if we look to Northwest Territories put in place a system that if a person from outside of the Northwest Territories was earning money in the Northwest Territories and then was paying their income tax elsewhere, that there was a 2% payroll tax on that. And where it comes from is it actually comes from the employer, but it comes from a combination of the employer and the employee, and it goes back into the general coffers. And so the reason why I think this is important, so I worked at the Wolverine Mine for a year. And when we were in care and maintenance, and there might have been 40 people on site, let's say 16 of us lived in the territory, right? And the rest lived outside. And then when we went into construction and then into development, and there was 300 people on the mine site, we had 40 people who were from the Yukon, and we had 260 people who flew into work. And so those 260 people are captured by our WCB. So if someone is hurt on the job, they are going to be covered by Yukon WCB no matter where they live. They are, you know, they're in the territory, they're accessing healthcare, whatever happens to need. But more than that is that them working here doesn't benefit our local economy, because they take that money elsewhere. When you and I and everyone on this call, we pay our income tax, we pay it into the territory, and then it gets redistributed, it goes to municipalities, it does all those things. So by putting on a payroll tax for fly-in, fly-out workers or drive-in, drive-out workers, essentially, I want to capture the people who pay their income tax out of territory but earn their money in the territory. And that would include, just to be super clear, it would include seasonal workers, right? It would include people who came up for 6 months of the year. It would include the folks who are working at Victoria Gold now. It would include people at Alexa. So it's the full gamut. But when we look at the number of folks who do this and the money that they earn in the territory that they then take elsewhere, really, I just want them to contribute to like the health and well-being of Yukon. And it happens in the Northwest Territories, and industry doesn't blink an eye, because that is the cost of doing business there. And if we can incentivize folks to hire local, And if it's your young people who are going to operator school to work heavy machinery, and it's your young people being carpenters and electricians and all the rest of it, then I want them to get hired. Because in the deepest, darkest time of the pandemic, when a contractor flew in people from Manitoba to do siding, when there were people in the territory who could have done that work, if this payroll tax would have incentivized them to hire local and it would have benefited our local economy, then that is what we should do. And so it has been done. It is very successful in the Northwest Territories, and that's what this idea is based on. Did that answer your question?
Well, a little bit better than what Patty did. Oh, God bless her heart.
To be fair, I mean, I've been thinking about this for a really long time, so I hope I did all right.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks, Kate. We are at 8 o'clock. You're sure?
Yeah, if anyone's got questions, for sure.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I want to ask about the.
Yeah.
I'm a copy editor, and so I'm fascinated by an election where the minutiae of grammar has taken center stage. Fascinated. It's sure. The best. It's great. Sure. Can I ask why and will this require legislative changes?
No legislative changes, and yeah. It won't cost anything. Just when we change different signs. Why? Because Wayne, everything I talk about, not everything, a lot of the things that I talk about are pretty hard. I talk about opioid crises, and I talk about poverty, and I talk about homelessness, and I talk about, you know, the responsibility we have. And the really was just lighthearted. And so it's the one thing that is not serious in the 80 pages of things that I talk about. So that's kind of the real answer. Being honest with you, Wayne. That and ultimately, actually, no, one more thing. When Dylan Cousins was just playing hockey and the two commentators were kind of arguing about UConn or the UConn, and it was like 35 seconds of them trying to figure out what they were supposed to call us, I was like, see, the UConn. I've never stopped calling it the UConn.
It was not lost on me or others that it was sort of a lighthearted. Although these things I am passionate about, and I am even more passionate about the fact that every highway sign, sorry to wreck it for everybody out there, that labels our town as Dawson City is a typo. Every single one is a typo.
What is it supposed to say?
City of Dawson.
We have two names. I won't bore people with the details, but Dawson City is not one of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
I'll explain it to you one day, Kate. You really are interested.
I'll be there this summer to go biking, so I look forward to it.
Yeah. And then I can explain to you I'll stop now before I embarrass myself.
Okay, I think that's it. I think other than if anyone has any more questions. How did Corey Belmore become Shirley Belmore? That's the question. Anyways, people's changing in the middle of. Anyways, I digress. It's been a long day.
I can relate.
Yeah, probably not as Corey borrowed.